From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight, we say goodbye to 2025. It was a year of momentous change in the world, and especially for the Church, who in the span of less than a month lost a Holy Father and then elected a new one. EWTN News' Benedict Settegren reports.
It was a quiet start to what would become a monumental and historic year for the Catholic Church. On Christmas Eve 2024, Pope Francis opened the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica, marking the beginning of the Holy Year and inaugurating the 2025 Jubilee of Hope. During the Holy Year, the Pope prayed, "May the light of Christian hope illumine every man and woman," as a message of God's love addressed to all. But Pope Francis would go on to suffer several health challenges. On February 14th, he entered the Gemelli Hospital with bronchitis and respiratory issues. He stayed for 38 days, the longest hospitalization of his papacy. But he wasn't completely out of the public eye. The Holy Father even celebrated Mass as he wore an alb and stole, giving faithful a sign of hope for medical improvement. After a five-week stay in the hospital, Pope Francis was discharged, appearing from the hospital window before leaving, waving and giving a thumbs up to a cheering crowd. Even in his weakened state, Pope Francis still offered some surprises: an unannounced visit to Rome's Regina Coeli prison and an appearance to St. Peter's Basilica to pray before the Easter Vigil. On the last day of his life, he met with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance and even made the rounds on the Popemobile to greet the faithful, roaring with joy. It would be his final farewell.
Omnipotens Deus, Pater, et Filius, et Spiritus Sancti.
Early on Easter Monday, Pope Francis, the first Latin American pope, passed away at the age of 88.
Con profondo dolore.
With deep sorrow, I must announce the death of our Holy Father, Francis.
With his death announced on April 21st, Pope Francis marked yet another first in the history of the Catholic Church, becoming the first pope to open the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica without living to close it. During the funeral mass in St. Peter's Square, Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, Dean of the College of Cardinals, recalled the pope's mission.
Rich in human warmth and deeply sensitive to today's challenges, Pope Francis truly shared the anxieties, sufferings, and hopes of this time of globalization. He gave of himself by comforting and encouraging us with a message capable of reaching people's hearts in a direct and immediate way.
A sea of people flooded St. Peter's Square. Hundreds of thousands, including cardinals, bishops, priests, world leaders, and the faithful, all gathered to mourn the passing of the 266th Pope of the Catholic Church. In his final public address, the Pope appealed for Gaza and Ukraine. At his funeral, a hopeful sight. In a secluded corner near the entrance doors of the Basilica, the presidents of the U.S. and Ukraine spoke in hushed tones about reviving the efforts to end Russia's war with Ukraine. Pope Francis's pontificate is largely remembered for those pleas for peace. As Pope Francis left St. Peter's Basilica for the last time, people lined the streets to pay tribute to the Holy Father. In a historic procession, the coffin traveled in the Popemobile to the Basilica of St. Mary Major to be entombed, a shift in recent tradition. Pope Francis wanted to be buried there instead of the Vatican, due to his deep devotion to Mary and his wish to be accessible to the people. The funeral of Pope Francis marked the official start of the Novem Dialis, the solemn 9-day mourning period, which was followed by the start of the conclave. In Rome, Benedict Settegren for EWTN News Nightly.
2025 wasn't defined by sorrow alone. It also opened a new chapter in the history of the Catholic Church with the election of Pope Leo XIV. From a historic conclave and revived traditions to youth gatherings of millions and bold calls for peace, Pope Leo's first year in office has already left an indelible mark on the world. EWTN Vatican journalist Zofia Tchubak has a closer look at the highlights of this remarkable first year.
Extra omnes.
As Archbishop Diego Ravelli, the Vatican's master of pontifical liturgical celebrations, called for all to exit and close the Sistine Chapel doors, the conclave officially began on May 7th, 2025. After 2 days of prayer and 4 ballots, the cardinals elected Cardinal Robert Prevost as the new Bishop of Rome, taking the name Pope Leo XIV.
La pace sia con tutti voi.
The election of Pope Leo, the first pope born in the United States and the first Augustinian pontiff, quickly inspired widespread interest, with tens of thousands of faithful gathering at masses and audiences to welcome the new shepherd of the church. With the Jubilee year already in full swing upon his election, Pope Leo quickly took up the task begun by Pope Francis, marked by countless events with different groups like artists, seminarians, members of the Eastern churches, confraternities, and many others. The Jubilee of Youth, which gathered thousands of young pilgrims in a joyful expression of faith, stood out as a highlight of the Pope's first summer.
Jesus tells us, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world.
For the final weekend of the Jubilee, nearly 1 million youth gathered in the eastern outskirts of Rome. An unforgettable weekend of prayer, praise, and encounters for many. Pope Leo's closeness to young people and the little ones has been evident from the beginning of his ministry in his interactions with the faithful. From holding babies in his arms after audiences in Paul VI Hall to stopping the Popemobile in St. Peter's Square to bless children, Pope Leo's tender gestures have captured the hearts of many. Many have also been especially joyful to see Pope Leo embrace tradition and revive earlier papal customs, as when the Holy Father celebrated the solemnity of Corpus Christi at the Papal Basilica of St. John Lateran, his cathedral as Bishop of Rome. The Pope also chose to return to the papal residence in Castel Gandolfo over the summer, and to this day continues to make weekly visits and answering questions from journalists on his way out to speak about pressing issues and share his thoughts with the faithful. From the day of his election, Pope Leo's pontificate has been marked by a clear and constant call to peace.
My dear sisters and brothers, peace be with you.
The Holy Father has repeatedly stressed that true peace embraces not only human relationships, but also our relationship with the earth entrusted to us, and that caring for creation reflects and fosters peace among people. At the diplomatic level, the Pope has worked towards what he has called an unarmed and disarming peace, meeting with world leaders including US Vice President J.D. Vance, Israeli President Isaac Herzog, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to encourage peace dialogue, ceasefires, and an end to war. His commitment to peace has also found expression in ecumenical outreach, notably through a historic prayer service with Britain's King Charles III, marking a landmark moment in Anglican-Catholic relations and underscoring the role of religious unity in fostering peace among nations.
O God, make speed to save us.
In keeping with his desire for unity and his motto, In illo una unum, meaning in the one, we are one, Pope Leo undertook his first apostolic trip to Turkey to mark the 1,700th anniversary of the First Ecumenical Council of Nicaea.
The more we are reconciled, the more we Christians can bear credible witness to the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Continuing his trip to Lebanon, Pope Leo stressed that the Church carries the responsibility of sustaining hope and emphasized that perseverance in difficult conditions comes from prayer and faith.
Dear young people, perhaps you regret inheriting a world torn apart by wars and disfigured by social injustice. Yet there is hope, and there is hope within you.
with many more events, encounters and trips yet to come, and the approaching of the closing of the 2025 Holy Year of Hope, the Pope's enduring messages continue to resonate, messages of peace, of unity, and above all, of hope. In Rome, Zofia Chubak for EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including number 45 and 47. We look back at the start of President Trump's second term, his successes and challenges. And it's an ancient hymn traditionally sung on New Year's Eve. We'll show you why it's something you might want to try tonight. President Donald Trump capitalizes on his first 11 months in office, and he still has 3 years to go. The president's second term started last January, marking a stunning and historic political comeback after losing to Joe Biden in 2020. EWTN News Nightly White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports on some of the biggest stories to emerge from the White House.
Well, that's right. Tonight, we take a look back at some of the key decisions made and actions taken by the Trump administration, impacting not only millions of Americans, but people around the globe.
11 months ago, President-elect Donald Trump, who served as the 45th president of the United States, takes the oath of office and becomes the 47th president of the United States.
So help me God. So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
At his second inauguration, he tells Americans,
"During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first."
Right out of the gates, on January 20th, 2025, the president issuing an executive order protecting the American people against invasion, clamping down on illegal immigration at the southern border, drastically reducing border crossings from Mexico into the U.S. Another executive order in February, keeping men out of women's sports, one of the key issues on which he won back the White House. The Trump administration says men competing in women's sports is demeaning, unfair, and dangerous to women and girls. He declared to a mostly female audience at the White House,
"From now on, women's sports will be only for women."
The president and billionaire friend Elon Musk went to work slimming down the federal workforce through the controversial Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Many federal employees suddenly unemployed.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day.
In the Rose Garden, the president announced reciprocal tariffs on countries across the globe, rattling financial markets and putting nations near and far, friend and foe, on notice.
This is one of the most important days, in my opinion, in American history. It's our declaration of economic independence.
President Trump traveled to the funeral for Pope Francis, which the EWTN Global Catholic Network broadcasts live to the world.
But then begin the very important work in collaborating with the Holy Spirit, discerning who will be the next successor of St. Peter.
And now we're seeing President Trump's arrival.
In July, surrounded by congressional lawmakers cheering him on, the president signed his big, beautiful bill, his top legislative victory, including tax cuts for Americans. Meanwhile, in his first year back in office overseas, the president working to end wars, including Ukraine. On one occasion in the Oval Office, President Trump meeting with Ukraine's president, things got heated. And in Alaska, President Trump meeting with the man who launched the invasion of its neighbor, Russia's Vladimir Putin. President Trump's biggest peace achievement, arriving in the Middle East. Under his administration, Israel and the terror group Hamas finally reaching a ceasefire in their war after tens of thousands of people are killed or wounded. And in September, the assassination that shocked America, the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk, gunned down by a sniper in Utah as he spoke to college students. President Trump later addressed a packed memorial service.
"Our country was robbed of one of the brightest lights of our times, a giant of his generation, and above all, a devoted husband, father, son, Christian, and patriot."
The president also going after illegal immigrants in American cities using federal agents, a controversial move causing blowback and protests against ICE from some cities and states. And in the fight against illegal narcotics killing Americans, the president takes aim, literally, at boats carrying drugs coming out of South America. And as his first year back in office winds down, President Trump, under criticism from some Americans, unhappy about the cost of living, including prices for homes, cars, and food, even as gas prices fall.
President Trump also facing another big challenge in the coming year, trying to keep his party in power. The midterm elections not that far down the road, and any shift in power down the road from here at the Capitol could impact his final 2 years in office. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, it was a year like no other, from the inauguration of President Trump's second term in office to landmark legislation to a record-breaking government shutdown. And now, division among the parties is at an all-time high. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has a look back on what took place on Capitol Hill.
Good evening. Ever since the 119th Congress was sworn in on January 3rd, both sides have been at each other's throats. Congressman Mike Johnson was reelected as Speaker of the House, and Democrats again chose Hakeem Jeffries as minority leader.
Almighty God, who has given us this good land for our heritage, we humbly beseech thee that we may always prove ourselves a people mindful of thy favor and glad to do thy will. Bless our land with honorable ministry, sound learning, and pure manners.
America promises one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That's the America House Democrats will fight hard to preserve.
A few days later, then Vice President Kamala Harris presided over the certification of President Trump's election. On January 20th, President Trump was officially sworn in as the 47th President of the United States. Trump's cabinet confirmations followed, and the fight over government funding intensified as the deficit continued to rise. In February, President Trump imposed tariffs on imports from Mexico, Canada, and China, and more countries since then, causing backlash from some lawmakers. The president's March speech to a joint session of Congress was overshadowed when Congressman Al Green was kicked out and later censured by the House for disrupting the speech. More censures would follow. In March, Senator Chuck Schumer voted to keep the government open and angered his party. Over the next few months, Republicans hurried to finish and pass the One Big Beautiful Bill with President Trump's domestic agenda. He signed it on July 4th.
Over 14 months of hard work, deliberation, compromise, things that nobody will be happy with the entire bill. But most of us understand that that's compromise, that's democracy at work. We are better off of this.
Senate Republicans betrayed the American people and covered this chamber in shame. In one fell swoop, Republicans passed the biggest tax breaks for billionaires ever seen, paid for by ripping health care away from millions of Americans.
Just before the House passed the bill, Leader Hakeem Jeffries gave a marathon speech against the Republican-backed legislation. At the end of July, Republicans passed a rescissions bill, bringing with it some $9 billion in cuts to foreign aid and public broadcasting. During the hot summer days of August, lawmakers introduced bills to force the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. As a Republican-backed redistricting fight started, first in Texas, soon followed by California and others, the U.S. Supreme Court has issued a temporary order allowing Texas to use its Republican-drawn maps in the 2026 midterms, while legal challenges continue. A record-breaking 43-day government shutdown began on October 1st, and frustrations grew.
SNAP recipients shouldn't go without food. People should be getting paid in this country. And we've tried to do that 13 times. And you voted no 13 times. This isn't a political game. These are real people's lives that we're talking about.
When it was over in mid-November, the key Democrat demand, extending Obamacare tax credits for 3 years, remained elusive.
Donald Trump and the Republicans think it's more important to give $1 trillion in tax breaks to a handful of billionaires than it is just to continue some help for our neighbors who need access to health care.
In early December, lawmakers voted on health care bills trying to fix Obamacare. Millions faced higher premiums without government subsidies. As the first session ends, lawmakers are already turning towards the 2026 midterms. Republicans are hoping to keep their majority in both chambers, but Democrats say this November's results show that they have momentum.
At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, an ancient New Year tradition. We'll introduce you to the hymn often sung on New Year's Eve and why you may want to sing it tonight. Close out 2025 and prepare to welcome 2026. We'd like to end the show turning our hearts and minds to God with a look at a beautiful ancient hymn called the Te Deum.
The hymn is something which is probably from the year 400, around 400.
The Te Deum is the supreme hymn of praise and thanksgiving to God. Dating back centuries, it's been used liturgically in the church since the medieval age.
It's used in the church already. For example, in the Rule of St. Benedict, he talks about the Te Deum, and we're looking at there with an early monastic rule.
Throughout its history, it has been ascribed to several authors, most notably St. Ambrose and St. Augustine. In fact, in some books, it's still called the Ambrosian hymn. However, it is likely that the true author is someone else.
It's probably written by Nicetas of Remesiana, and he was a great friend of Paulinus of Nola, a bishop in southern Italy. And he was a missionary bishop who went to Remesiana at that time, certainly obviously a Roman colony, but now it would be in Serbia, southeast Serbia.
Though it's one hymn, the Te Deum is split up into several parts.
Te Deum basically has three sections. The first section, like Te Deum Laudamus, so God, we praise you, and so it keeps going on. And basically the first part is a praise of the Trinity. The second part is really the praise of Christ, and Christ who becomes man for our salvation. And he enters the Virgin Mary's womb, he suffers and dies for us, and then he sits at the right hand of the Father in glory. The third part of the Deum is actually a prayer for us, and so that, like, bring us with you, all the saints, to praise you forever. And so let us not be put to shame or confounded in our hope. And so that's the third part of the Te Deum.
An ancient custom of the church is to sing the Te Deum on New Year's Eve. By doing so, we give thanks to God for all the blessings of the year, including weddings, ordinations, new births, or things that may seem like crosses at first, but later become blessings in themselves. It's a kind of thanksgiving that's built into being human.
It's a matter of the heart. And it's a matter of looking at the mystery of God, and also we can compare it to looking at the mystery of the human person. So, like, there's no word of thanksgiving to God in there. But as a matter of fact, we do praise God a lot and give him thanks because of who he is. You are, you are, you are, you are.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.